Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and we're already having a lively discussion. I'll turn this camera around.
Good evening.
There she is, the person we were talking about. Everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Nice to see everyone tonight.
We were talking about your stalker.
Yeah.
And also...
my celebrity stalker.
Your celebrity stalker. And please go into the past shows and figure out who that is. Email me at darkmarkshow@gmail.com. If you can find out who that is, I'll send you a can of Raise energy drink. No, actually, I'll send you some tactical soap. I will do that. I will mail you some tactical soap on my dime. Also, I made a drink faux pas, not Nicole.
It's okay. I don't think that's worthy of the.
It's worthy of discussion because our guest requested Cabernet Sauvignon Blanc.
No Cabernet. Cabernet's red. It's just Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, and I got Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yes.
And I chilled it.
It's
easy
okay.
Mistake.
Which you're not supposed to do.
No, but I told you to chill the Sauvignon Blanc, so you just were following my advice.
No, but I could have followed your advice and actually read the label on what I was getting, which I didn't do.
Well, I know wine could get you drunk, and they could get you drunk.
That's basically it. It's made from grapes, well, too. You know
yes,
that.
Yes.
Even though it's chilled, it's an excellent Cabernet.
It is.
So.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're going to meet – we've got some – new friends.
I'm excited. I brought a friend. You brought a friend.
Well, and it's funny because my friend, I don't know that well. I've been researching both these people. And I'm getting to know them well, and I can't wait to talk to them. So we're going to really just strengthen our friendship with both of these people.
Yay!
And these are very interesting Hollywood hyphenates.
Okay.
As we usually do.
Yes.
Do you agree?
I agree. I told when I was asking a person to be on the show today, I said we interview entertainers of all sorts.
Yes. Well, here's two entertainers of all sorts. Here she is right here.
Hi.
She is a dancer, choreographer, actress, YouTuber, all sorts of things.
All the things.
Yes. And by the way, these are two people that have two of the best voices I've ever heard. And seriously, straight out of Britain,
why, thank you.
Straight out of Manchester, and she has choreographed all sorts of things and actually, we have something in common, which I'm going to reveal later, but you've been on,
I'm on edge.
Your choreographies have been featured on Celebrity Apprentice, Shark Tank, all sorts of weird things, and the Super Bowl, the Olympics, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Here she is, Abby Ann Oliver.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, music videos as well, and your traditional things, shows, all sorts of things.
All across the board. Never a dull day. So.
you've danced all the way across the Atlantic, and now you're here in L.A.
Yeah.
And we match you up with this guy, who is a wrestler, actor, and screenwriter, and author. You may know him as the Greaseball. What was it? Grease Lightning. If you follow the independent wrestling scene, and if you follow horror movies, he's popping up in every one of them. And he just wrote his third book, which is called A Death in the Family, which I'm very excited to read about. It's about the business of death.
Yes.
And once again, we've gotten to know each other recently, and we've never really talked at length. I'm looking forward to it. Ronnie Angel.
Me too. Thanks for having
me. And not the Ronnie Angel who was a 50s rocker. The Ronnie Angel who's the Grease Lightning.
That's right.
And speaking of Grease Lightning, I need to get my energy up to keep up with you, Hollywood Hyphenate. So I'm drinking this. There it is. Raise energy drink. This is my last juice box can, so I got to get some more. They've got great flavors. They came out with ginger ale. They have Baja Lime that tastes like Baja Blast. They have Voodoo Fruit Punch, which is one of Nicole's favorites.
Yes.
And if you doubt this works, the last couple of shows we did – we mixed this with vodka and all of the guests drank it. And Nicole and I were up till like 1 in the morning just talking because we had so much energy. And the best part about Raise Energy Drink, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. Now you can go to GNCs or vitamin stores, but why pay the whole price? Use our code in the show description on Spotify, wherever you're listening to us, on Renegade Radio, on YouTube. You get 15% off a case of Raise Energy Drink. Abby, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to just put the camera right in your face, as I tend to do. You're born in Manchester.
Yes.
And I'm intrigued by Manchester. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about it. All I know from Manchester is basically from watching the movie 24-Hour Party People, which is way before your time. But
great movie. I've never seen that movie. So
you
got to
see
it. I have to see it.
No, because
never even heard of it.
You've never heard of 24-hour party? I know, you're too young. 24-hour party, but I mean, are you aware of Joy Division, The Smiths, yes. New Order, yes. Happy Mondays, all the rave stuff? This is about the history of Manchester. It's about a guy, Steve Coogan stars in it. It's about this guy, and he should have won an Oscar because he sounds just like this guy, who started the Hacienda Club, started Factory Records, basically signed Joy Division and spun off into New Order, and started the whole Madchester movement in the early 90s, which was a big thing that Stone Roses and Happy Mondays and all these bands that were rock and kind of dance. And then Oasis hit, and then you never heard from Manchester again, except for you. So I
except for me.
What was it like living in Manchester?
It was amazing. I mean, everything you just described, the local music scene is absolutely unrivaled to me. Mm-hmm. I've never found it anywhere else.
Even LA.
Even LA is just like the commitment that everyone has to the smaller music venues and just small bands in general. It's just, it's amazing. It's it's got its like own subculture, and any night of the week you can find a really, really great local band or a great local event. And they just have so much support. And I spent most of my teens just going to shows of like big and small bands, and it was like a really great time in my life.
Were you a dancer when you were young?
I was a dancer when I was young, but the opportunity was quite lacking there. So aside from like dance classes, I wouldn't really have as much like opportunity or time to be devoting to it as I would want to. So
how did you get on the UK Junior Apprentice?
How did I get that job? Oh, my friends had actually called me. My friend was not in the country at the time, and she was like, hey, they're looking for choreographers. And I was like, well, what's it for? Or dancers as well.
And how old were you?
I was, 17.
Okay, so this is like The Apprentice in England, but it's all like teenagers.
Yeah, The Young Apprentice. So they bring in the crews, and they basically, they have to pitch business ideas, do the whole thing.
Okay.
And then for one of them, they needed dancers because they wanted to do like a full fashion show, dance show. So we got to do that episode, and we got to meet Alan Sugar and a bunch of like famous footballers and stuff. And it was super, it was super fun. That was my first TV gig. So it was kind of just like threw me in there. And it was so much fun.
By the way, we're all Americans. So we're like Alan Sugar and footballers. We have no idea what you're talking about. But
Alan Sugar is kind of like the business Donald Trump of there. He's absolutely terrible. You know how like Donald Trump had all the business shows out there? And he'd fire everybody. And like that's Alan Sugar over there. So he would do that. And he was absolutely
The rich prick over there.
The rich prick. That's exactly what it was. Rich prick over there. So that's our version of him. So
when did you start dancing, and when did you start choreographing? However you say it.
Choreography,
I don't know. What the participle of that verb is. So
participle. Nice.
I'm not sure. After I messed up the word. Go ahead.
Did great. So I started dancing when I was 3, and I started Irish dancing first because I saw the river dance.
I was going to ask that.
And I was like, I want to do that. I don't even remember any of this.
Lord of the Dance.
I was like, I want to do whatever that is. My parents like rolling their eyes, being like, what does she want to do? I always kept jumping from things. I want to do everything. So they take me to this Irish dance class, and they think nothing of it. I go for I think it was like 6 months, and then my teacher been like, oh, you should enter this competition. So they bring me to this competition, just thinking, what this is just like a tiny little local dance competition.
Really?
It's not. It's one of the huge competitions, and everyone's like head to toe in like the full Irish dance gear, the wigs, the makeup. Like these parents have invested thousands of dollars.
It's like a beauty pageant.
Yeah. And my parents apparently walked in and were like, oh shit, like this is not going to go well for her. And I took every single trophy, and then everyone was like, basically staring my parents down, being like, why the fuck did she, cause I rock up in like shorts and a t-shirt, just no makeup, nothing, just. Here
right,
I am.
Right.
And then
Just talent.
I took all the trophies, and then one of the judges had come over to my parents and been like, she has something special. I don't know what you want to do with that. And my parents, again, just shrugged and were like, we don't know. They're not dancers. They don't work in entertainment. Very like regular jobs, raised a family and everything. And then from there, that was it. I was just dance, just continued and continued.
Now the Irish dance, I mean, and how old were you?
I was started when I was 3 or 4, and I did that until I was 6, and then I was over it, and I moved on to the next.
Oh, so this is a contest when you were like 6?
Yeah, I think I entered my competition when I was 6, won everything, and was like, "Can I do something else now?"
Because that's a very disciplined Because you can't move your arms.
Yeah,
apparently.
Very disciplined. Apparently, I was really good at it. I've seen video footage. I don't remember much.
Oh, I would love to see it. That's great. Six-year-old Abby doing the being the Lord of the Dance.
Yeah,
that would be great.
It was cool. I remember it. It was a good time. But yeah, and then after that, I was like, oh, I guess I won everything. I'll just do the next thing.
Yeah.
And we tried ballet now or jazz, so just went on from there.
And did you excel at all of them, or was there one that was particularly difficult?
I wasn't great at the ballet. I was all right, but not phenomenal at ballet. I just preferred like hip hop and jazz and everything, and that's what I kind of continued doing.
Right.
And that's where all the work was.
Tap dancing.
Can you describe jazz dance? What's jazz dance?
Jazz dance. You ever seen Fosse?
No.
And it's like a lot of jazz hands, clean lines.
I was thinking
like
jazz
a lot
dance,
of this,
like cabaret and like that type of thing. I'm thinking Fosse because I know cabaret and all that jazz. That's
so
all I know.
If you go into YouTube and just type Fosse, he's like the most incredible creator and choreographer to me.
Can you do the jazz hands just real quick for us?
Not spirit fingers, but jazz hands.
Okay. Oh, what's the difference?
Spirit fingers is like this, and then jazz hands would be more like this. Spirit fingers like cheerleading. But you can do it anytime. But yeah, if you're watching and you're interested, go look up Fosse.
I think Ronnie's got the jazz hands.
I thought this is more like the Queen's Wave.
Well, you gotta like shake it this way instead of this way. That's the Queen's Wave.
Yeah.
Fosse, it is one of the most incredible jazz creators, and the jazz really kind of was an opening point to a lot of like the hip hop, jazz, funk, street jazz that we see today. So that was really the style that started all those fusions that came off it. And that was the one that intrigued me the most.
Right.
It's just so like passionate and strong and exciting.
Now, when you say hip hop, do you ever breakdance or pop lock or anything?
No, cannot breakdance, cannot pop lock. I trained a little bit of popping, trained a little bit of locking. I think they're incredible styles. Can I do them? Absolutely not.
Okay.
You
can't do everything.
But
you can river dance. You can do. Well, I mean, the jazz hands is impressive enough. You don't have to pop.
That's all I need. I just got to do jazz.
Right.
Hands, so
I'm like Dr. Evil when I dance.
Oh yeah.
It's horrible. Yeah. Nobody wants to see that.
I think everyone can dance in their own way.
But here's the thing. You say that, but you're a wrestler, so there is choreography involved. So you are a dancer in a sense.
Choreography, timing, moves. You have to understand your body.
And by the way, I see Ronnie wanted the camera on him, and he wanted to talk. So that's why that was a great segue, Ronnie. Thank you very much.
The basic dance, what I teach people is move your hips. Then move your shoulders, and if you move your shoulders and your hips, you're dancing.
Right. Except when we were dancing a couple weeks ago, I was like, "Oh, I went up and started dancing." She's like, "Oh, you're leaving? Bye." So,
well, he told me he was leaving, and then he said he was leaving at midnight, and it was midnight, so I thought he was going home, but no,
But I started like moving and dancing,
I didn't see that part.
Apparently not. So, one thing before I get to you, Ryan, because I do want to talk about the wrestling and the choreography that is involved, and there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Now, you're in L.A. now.
I am.
So, why L.A.? Because I want to know, we'll get back to the choreography, because I want to know how you transition from dancing to choreography, which seems to be a thing. But why L.A. and not London or New York?
Well, I did work in London for a while, and I did some really incredible jobs. Like I said, I did the Olympics, and that was like a really high point in my career.
I would say so.
It's phenomenal.
How did you get that?
Phenomenal time in my life.
How did you get that?
I applied. I think I went through like 6 different auditions. It was a lot. It was a really intense process, and then got it. And then we were training for 3 months in London, but I was on another job in Manchester, so I was just going back and forth on trains all week long.
And what did you choreograph? This is not my day. What did you choreograph in the London Olympics?
Oh, I did not. I wish I choreographed the London. I was just a dancer.
You were a dancer.
Yeah, but I'm actually really glad that I was, because just like being on the actual stage, if I choreographed it, I wouldn't have been able to be in it. I would have been overseeing it, and it was just being on that stage.
But wow,
night was like
what pressure, though.
Insane. Yeah, it was incredible pressure. And most people don't know this. We were supposed to get a dress rehearsal. We did not have a dress rehearsal because they didn't build the stage. They didn't finish building the stage until 6 hours before the closing ceremony started.
Wow.
So imagine, it's like the biggest show on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And our stage was built like a flag. So we had the center, and then we had the pillars of the flag. And all of us were going on different pillars and doing different things at different angles. So we had absolutely zero rehearsal. We were just lined up at this huge concrete segue, and they're like, go, basically, like 8 counts, and everything is fully timed, and we danced for 11 minutes too. Our piece was 11 minutes long, and I just blacked out half of it. I like just I have no idea what happened, but yeah, we had zero dress rehearsal.
It's fight or flight.
After 3 months of rehearsal, we did not get to do it on the stage. And we never seen the stage. We didn't get to go on the stage. We didn't even get to step foot on the stage.
Right. So, wow. So,
Very impressive.
So let me ask you, let me ask you a question about that. I know you didn't mess up. Did anybody mess up?
No, I don't think anybody did. I think it was just one of those things that we was just so excited, and it was just like, this is what it is. What, and most professional dancers are trained for this. It's like, something is going to go wrong. Production is going to mess something up. There's always a switch. Even if somebody like falls over or a dancer gets injured, something's going to change. So it's like, you just train to just go with it and do the best that it
can. Right, but nobody fell off the stage.
Nobody fell off the stage. It was pretty perfect from what I can remember.
That's amazing.
On my segment anyway, so.
And what's it like being out there without a net in front of 100,000 people watching, not only 100,000 people, but a billion people in the world watching you?
It was, I don't know, like the best feeling on earth. It was just amazing. I just remember running out and being like, what? You know, and then it's like, and then you're dancing for 11 minutes. But the cool, and then the cool part was because we, you know, you kind of just black out and you're just doing it and you're focusing on
your job.
You're
in the zone.
And you're in the zone and you're really not breathing. The cardio level for that piece as well was so high. Like I was nauseous when I came off. But the really cool thing was when they brought, all the athletes get to party on stage afterwards. So once, you know, the cameras are finishing and they're rolling the credits, everyone comes back on and they let us all come back on. So I have pictures. I got to hold all the gold medals.
Oh, wow.
We were just taking selfies. We met all the athletes and there's like confetti everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, so we actually got like, I think about 30 minutes on the stage without having to perform, which was really nice because otherwise we would have had, there wouldn't even have even been a second to like absorb it, you know.
Right.
It would have, we would have gone and I would have been like, what happened? So it was nice that they let us join the party with the other athletes because we got to,
you got to see it, you got to savor the Olympic moment. Yeah,
this just happened, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm setting my sights on the LA Olympics 2028. I want to choreograph it though. So
the catering company I work for got the contract for that.
Oh,
I know.
That's
so we've got an inside track. So Nicole, you got to hook Abby up. What's the matter with you?
Hook me up. They need a choreographer. They probably need multiple actually. So,
well, you grew up in Manchester, and you grew up in Oregon.
Ah,
Oregon and Washington.
And Washington. It's the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, yes.
And how was that?
Oh God, I miss it all the time. I mean,
really?
Yeah, yeah, that's my home, man.
But it's not like Portland or Seattle. You're like kind of, you were kind of in the sticks, weren't you? Or smaller towns?
Some of the time, yeah, of the time.
And sometimes you were in Portland and Seattle. And
yeah, yeah. Cities. I actually started wrestling in Portland.
Right, because that's a big wrestling town.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
Roddy Piper and all these people used to wrestle there.
Cool guy, by the way.
Oh, you met him?
Oh yeah, many times. I love Roddy. Yeah.
But tell me about the first time you met Roddy Piper.
Oh God!
By the way, I see you're blanking. That's a wrestler. It's a very famous wrestler from the '80s. Okay. Go ahead.
That was at a show in Portland, and I just remember he had some crazy stories. And
can you share one? He's dead. Nobody. He's not gonna beat you up if you tell a story.
There was one. He's asking about you know, kind of where I'm from, and I was like, oh well, I was living in Montana before this, and he told me a story about. Basically he went out to a bar there. He told me the name of it, Silver Dollar Bar. I'm like, oh yeah, I know exactly where that is. He's like, oh good, good. And apparently he got blackout drunk. He woke up in the hotel room. The door was ripped off the hinges. There was blood all over his face. There had been a fire in the room and he grabbed his stuff and he left in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh, okay.
Right. So Roddy Piper knows how to party.
Yes.
Could say he's rowdy. Like
He's a bit rowdy. He's a bit rowdy.
That might have something to do with that.
And he used to wear a kilt too, so he's he was Scottish, but he was from Portland. But that's
Canadian.
Was he Canadian? Well, I was going to get to that. I was going to segue to that because, from what I understand, a lot of your early wrestling was in Canada.
Yes.
He's Grease Lightning. Mm-hmm. His character is like a 50s greaser guy and very American. So you go to Canada and just curse out the Canadians. And you were a big bad guy in Canada.
Yeah. And
And you're still wrestling. So I'm not saying this in the past tense, but you're not as active as you were and you're doing other things.
Yeah, exactly. But on that, I mean, I would go up there. I'd have the American flag draped around me. And I would get on the microphone. I remember one of my favorite things to say was that I was King Obama's personal favorite wrestler. wrestler.
King Obama, that's great.
I have full diplomatic immunity, which means I could get away with whatever I want. I could kill one of you out there, and I could get away with it. And I'd pull out, you know, like a sheet, and I'd be like, it says it right here. It's written in his own blood. You see, it's black.
Blood's going to be a motif on the show, apparently, from Ronnie. A lot of blood, because we're going to talk about his books, too. But
oh, yeah.
No, that's great. So, I was going to say, you were a bad guy. I know, I mean, people, you know, most people that go to a wrestling show, they know it's a show. They know they're goofing around. But, and I remember when I went to a wrestling show when I was a little kid, and you know, I was scared. Like when the bad guy would start screaming at us, I was legitimately scared. My dad's like, he's just doing the show.
Yeah.
And my mom's like, come on, don't be scared. But I had Buggy Nova on, who was in the WWE.
Yeah.
And she said that the kids curse at the wrestlers more than the adults. That the kids are the ones that are really heckling you and yelling horrible things at you.
Yes, that is true.
What's the worst thing a child's ever said to you?
Oh God. I think that my favorite was and my tag team partner brings this up every time that we hang out, was "You fucking fuck! You fucking fuck!" Oh, it's just like, whoa.
Coming from a little kid, and how old was that kid? Like 10?
Oh God,
or
yeah,
younger?
Somewhere around that age. But yeah.
And in Canada, I mean, I know that
Canadians are supposed to be nice.
No, well, Canadians are nice, but the one thing I know about Canadian girls, and you can confirm this because I know you were on the road and I'm sure you had some debauchery. Canadian girls like to do two things, and they both begin with F. Fuck and fight, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was kind of funny because I remember being out of the club with my tag partner, and we were talking to these girls is up in Canada, and they're like, oh, where are you from? Oh, we're American.
See ya. Bye.
I think that we were part of the reason why they hated Americans.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because of you. Yeah. Ronnie Angel, I liked America before I saw Ronnie Angel. Now I hate America.
Pretty much, yeah.
But
what was your favorite part about going to Canada? Like, I've been to Vancouver. It was really nice.
To be honest, everything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, and what part of Canada were you in?
I was mainly in BC, but also Alberta. So across Western Canada, mainly.
So you never got over to Toronto, Montreal, or anything like that?
No, not over there. But I wish that we could have.
Mm.
But I know that, Canada is my favorite place. I wrestled pretty much exclusively there for about 5 years.
Right.
And there's so many reasons why. I mean, the fans are better.
Mm-hmm.
They take it more seriously. The promoters take care of you better.
Right.
And you know, I would do a show down like Portland, right? And it's pretty much like, oh yeah, you drove 6 hours to be here. Well, here's your $20. All right. See ya.
Yeah.
I'm left in a parking lot. Like, nobody wants to get a beer or anything.
Right. Right.
But in Canada, you're kind of like a family, you know?
Nice.
You travel together, you do tours together,
right?
You hang out afterwards, mm-hmm. and you just seem more appreciated up there.
Did you try ice wine?
Yes, I did, actually.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Well, you're trying ice wine right now. How do you like that? You're a chilled Cabernet Sauvignon.
Ice wine is a delicious wine. It's a white wine, and it's harvested from the grapes while they're still frozen, so they're sweet and delicious. You can only get it in Canada.
Okay.
If you go to Canada, you got to try ice wine.
I'll make a note of that. Abby's making a note of that, too. Next time you're in Canada, we're going to
do it. Ice wine's delicious. It's a sweet wine, like a Riesling.
Sounds like you've never been to Canada, just based on your reaction to our stories, or have you?
When I was tiny, I was in Niagara Falls.
Yeah. Oh, my grandmother lives in Niagara Falls. Yeah,
don't remember.
Yeah, it's the thing about Niagara Falls, which is funny, because my mother lives in Niagara Falls in the United States, is when you go from the United States to Mexico, there's a palpable like dirtiness.
Yeah.
Like once you cross the border, you're like, okay, we're not in America anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Once you go to Canada, there's a palpable cleanness.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's probably nice.
Yeah, we're the dirty ones, and they're the clean ones. That's not Ronnie. I sparked something. What were you going to say?
Yes. It was funny because I tell everybody that because we lived in a town called Wenatchee for about 10 years. It's in the middle of Washington,
mm-hmm.
middle of nowhere. It's on the Columbia River.
Right.
And It was like driving through a nuclear wasteland when you go north of there.
Right.
Like from maybe Lake Chelan to the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Mad Max out there.
Right.
Like it's very dry. And it was weird because it was like when Eddie went into Toontown.
Right.
Okay.
Because you get across the border and all of a sudden it opens up.
Yeah.
You know, like birds and shit are singing to you.
Right.
Like there's like orchards and forests and there's big cities and you're just like, what the hell happened here?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It is. It is the most beautiful place. And I got my passport renewed today.
Nice.
So I'm already talking with some of the guys about wrestling in Calgary again and wrestling in BC again.
That's great.
Cool. Yeah.
Right. So, since Abby's here, as far as the choreography, people don't realize what goes into it. Now, let me ask you, and I know you do independent shows, which is different from the WWE, which is, I'm sure, more choreographed, but, like, do you rehearse it before, or how do you know, like, okay, I'm going to do this guy, and I'm going to jump here and that? I mean, it seems like you would have to go over it before, or you just, or do you guys, like, you know, whisper to each other, I'm gonna jump over the rope and do that? I mean, seriously, I don't know how do you do it. Is it different every time?
It's mainly improv.
Okay.
Because I was actually on a show recently and the promoter kind of summed it up and he is like, you know what? You guys can do whatever you want in your match. The match is yours, but the finish is mine. Mm-hmm. Like I know what I want for the finish. I know I want you winning. How you get from point A to point B, that's between you guys.
Right. And does he dictate the move too?
No, not really.
Okay.
So, I mean...
Do you talk to the guy beforehand? Like, okay, let's do this, this, and this? Or do you just do it?
Yeah.
Right.
And we know that, so... Because
right. I've seen wrestling matches where it's like a couple guys are like... they're not where they're supposed to be, or they just... Or one guy thought a move was going to happen, and it didn't. He's just standing there, and...
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of skill to it that people don't understand.
Oh, there's a lot to it. Like, one wrong move and you're done. You could be paralyzed.
You could be paralyzed. You could be dead. You could be brain dead.
The safety part of that.
It's,
I would be very nervous.
But
did anything bad happen to anyone while you were wrestling?
All the time.
Oh, well, I know you. I know you. You messed up your knee and.
Yeah, and it's funny because there's a thing in wrestling we call the yay boo spot. It's very standard.
Oh, okay. Yay, I get it.
Yeah, you know.
I thought it was like an Indian term from the Pacific Northwest. I didn't know. Yay and boo.
The yay boo tribe.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, you get up in the corner and boo, yeah, screw you too. All right, and another guy gets up, yay. And then we were doing that. It was actually, where was it? Victoria was on Vancouver Island and we did the yay boo spot and literally all that I did was step off the rope and my knee just buckled.
Oh no.
And the bad part of that is I kept trying to tell myself, oh no, you're fine. And literally, like, you know, every time you throw a punch, when you step down, knee goes like this.
Right.
Oh, man.
Every time you move, your knee goes like this. Oh,
so you messed up even more.
Yeah. So finally, I tagged out to my partner. I even said, I'm going to go walk this off. I rolled out. I stood up. And then my knee just, I pretty much collapsed.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, torn ACL. And then I went like this.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm out.
Right.
What? I'm out.
Right.
What do we do? I don't know. Something without me.
Right. Yeah, you got to do that.
Do you ever have any injuries?
I was going to ask.
Yeah, I've had injuries, but actually, touch wood, nothing crazy dance related. Like, I've twisted my ankle a couple of times and never had anything that's, like, taken me off stage. But my friend, actually, in England did his, like, big thing was doing backflips off a wall.
Right.
But this one time he didn't test the wall.
Oh.
Backflipped, went through it, continued dancing
went for
like 25
wall?
Seconds, like as in like the wall shattered. Ugh. He landed on his neck, got Whoa. Up, he continued dancing for at least 25 seconds, blacked out, but he literally was so high on adrenaline and
oh,
like
wow.
he broke his neck on stage.
Oh
my God. Wow.
Yeah. So I've seen things like that happen.
Is he okay now?
Is he still parent?
Totally fine now. Yeah, he was in hospital for quite a while. Made a full recovery, like dancing and everything. But like, touch wood, I've never had anything that's like taken me out mid stage. But I've seen it happen countless times.
Well, let me ask you a question because. This is a professional show. I mean, how are you? It must be insured, right?
Are you? I mean, I don't remember how it worked in the. This was in the UK that this happened. I mean,
they have national health care.
I was going to say you don't have to pay for hospital bills anyway, so it's already.
That must be so nice because we're all struggling artists, and it's a whole different thing.
I have to not make too much money, or I will lose my insurance.
Yeah,
right. It's nuts.
And I need my insurance.
Yeah.
But by the way, if you are ever injured, I will tell you, go to renegadecbd.com and you will feel a lot better. That is one of our sponsors. They have CBD gummies, CBD white chocolates. They have all sorts of things. Help you sleep. Mm-hmm. Help you heal. Nicole's tried them.
CBD bath bombs.
Bath bombs as well. And that will, if you have sore knees or ankles, that will...
I am working these long hours now. And I'm like, if only I had a CBD bath bomb.
Right. You worked an hour and a half yesterday.
I worked like 6 hours yesterday.
Oh, okay, I thought you said they set you home early.
Not after an hour and a half.
I don't know. Yeah, I must have misread the text. But yeah, if you have a hard 6-hour workday, have a bath bomb and relax.
Yeah.
If you want to try it, renegadecbd.com. Now, this is what we have in common. I found this out in my research.
I'm ready.
We were both featured for about 10 seconds each on Twins Happily Ever After, the reality show. Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
You know that's so weird? My friend just texted me about that 2 days ago, being like, throwback, and like sent me a clip from that show.
It was probably the same one he sent me last night.
Yeah.
No way.
Well, it's on your YouTube channel, so I would imagine that's what it is.
Yeah, it must be. I didn't even know that was on there.
Because I lived in Las Vegas. I lived in Las Vegas.
No way.
And, my bit was they were trying to find a date for her mother. So they said, let's get some wild cards in there. So I had my whole goth makeup on. Mm-hmm. So I got SAG scale. I got paid over $1,000 for it.
That is amazing.
And, you know, and I sat with them. They did a whole interview, asked me how big night my dick was and the whole thing. and then I'm like, I can't wait for the show. And then at the beginning, they have a preview of what's going on in the season. Yeah. So I'm in that for like 10 seconds going, whoa. And I was like, I can't wait for the show.
Like,
and then when the show aired, I'm not on the show.
No way.
And then there was a show. And by the way, these are the twins that were on The Bachelor. Yeah. And they had their own show on Freeform. And they're both super nice.
Yeah, they're so nice.
Super nice.
So nice.
Super nice. And a lot sharper than the show made them out to be.
Yeah.
But so they had a show where they were trying to be dancers.
Yep.
And you're
they
one
were trying
of
to audition for the Rams. Oh, no, it wasn't the Rams. It must have been a different team.
It was the Rams.
So these two twins were trying to audition for the Rams. So we got brought in as like the dance troupe that was like helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to all be cheerleaders. But the funniest thing is on the show, they made it look like we were in rehearsal for a week and we shot for a day. And they made us bring like 8 outfits each. And every hour we were changing, they were like, day two. And we're like, yay, day two. Like, everyone has exactly the same hair. Everyone has the same makeup. We're getting sweatier and sweatier as the day goes on. It was so funny. And then the whole point was like these girls were supposed to like nail this double spin.
Right.
And they couldn't. They were so tired by the end of the day.
I'm sure.
They could not fucking nail this double spin. And everyone's like, oh my God. Because we're like, we're wrapped if they get this spin. Like this is like the last shot.
So it's like you're waiting for like an hour for them to do the spin.
Yeah, this was supposed to be like the grand. But the thing is, they've been training for months to get this spin. So that was supposed to be like the finale moment was like in this week of rehearsals.
Okay.
They were going to achieve this like double spin and we were all going to be like, oh my God, like whatever. Yeah, actually the producers were really nice. We had a good day.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was a fun show.
The staff was great. They were super cool.
Staff were great. That was one of my first TV shows I did here in America. So I was just happy to be there.
Yeah. Cause you just, I would think you just moved to LA.
Moved to LA about a year prior. So I was like having a great time. But,
so you had to drive to Vegas and do that. And
well, we actually filmed in LA.
Oh, you filmed in LA. Cause they lived in Vegas. So that's good. So
that was when I started realizing how fake reality TV is.
People don't know.
When they literally came in, they were like, so we're going to pretend you're in here for 7 days, but we're going to be in here for 7 hours. So let's just make it work. And I'm like, oh my God.
Dated a guy who was friends with James Kennedy from Vanderpump Rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started watching Vanderpump Rules to see what it was like. And it's fake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they all are.
It's so fake.
They all are.
I used to believe all of it.
Right.
All of it.
Were you a big reality fan?
Yeah. Like The Hills. I used to love The Hills. That was like, before I even moved here, I was like, this is a cool show ever. And now I get here. Oh, Friends, like not even reality TV, like Friends, when I found out that Friends was filmed in the Warner Brothers lot in LA.
Right.
That was a bad day.
Right. Yeah.
That was like the day that I think I question everything after that. Like every time I see a movie now, I'm like, they're not even in New York.
Well, they're never in New York. It's they're too expensive to film in New York. They film New York in Toronto all the time.
Yeah.
Or Australia or something. I guess, so what was I? Something was just filmed in Australia that was supposed to. Evil Dead, I think, was filmed in New Zealand.
Wow. It was
supposed to be LA.
Yeah, it's great. Like, it's a great movie. Someone was talking about this. Like, we don't talk about horror a lot. We're going to talk about it today because Ronnie. And I will say this. They talk about how the Evil Dead series has yet to have a bad movie. A lot of franchises, there's always a dud in them.
Right.
Evil Dead, they got it nailed.
Okay. What about the TV show?
I didn't watch the TV show.
You should. Anyway, but so you moved to LA from Manchester. Now, that's quite a move. Quite a culture shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would think so, but for me, I hated England so much.
Right.
And I know it sounds horrible, but I just never...
What didn't you like about it?
I just never fit in there. I felt like... And I'm from a small town, so I'm from Manchester, but I'm from a little sub-town called Sale.
Oh, okay.
It's a lovely place. They have really good schools there, so I'm grateful for the education that I got whilst I was there.
River dance classes.
Yeah, the river dance classes, of course. And I had a good little community there, but everyone around me was like, want to be a doctor, lawyer, I want to have a family, I want to buy a house, I want to do all these things. And from being so young, I was just like, am I like the odd one out? I don't want any of this. And I always felt connected to American culture.
Mm-hmm. But it's not an artistic community.
Not at all an artistic community. Everyone's very safe over there and you kind of follow the status quo. And my parents would take me to America when I was younger. I would go to New York. We went to Boston a couple of times. And I just remember like loving New York so much. So I quit school. I was like, I'm going to go to dance college. And even that was bad because, again, we're in Manchester. So our teachers are just dancers that became teachers in Manchester. They have no like wisdom to offer us as far as actually entering the industry. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to get to do some really good jobs. And I found a few people that could help me and they kind of pushed me. But I was always just like, what's next? You know, I want to like do TV. I want to do movies. I want to become the biggest dancer choreographer in the world. I'm not going to do that from London. I just didn't feel like it was possible.
Right.
The Beatles had a statement. I watched this in a documentary. It was part of the reason I moved to Los Angeles. John Lennon goes, so we moved to London, because that's what you do when you're in a band. You go to London. You got to find that place where you can grow and evolve with your art.
Yeah, exactly. And London was great, but even then, you're still a subsection.
Yeah.
In a greater city that's a lot of bankers, finance people,
just because the Beatles went to London, that doesn't mean your London is London.
Yeah, totally. And there's like lots of bands, but you're still, you know, it's like if you like throw a ball, you might hit one creative person in 100.
Yeah.
Whereas in LA, I feel like
you're surrounded by creative.
You can't walk down the street. You can't talk to anybody in a coffee shop. And, and people might think that that's overkill, but for me, it's not because it's just so cool to have all these people in one space and you can do something like record a podcast on a Thursday evening with four like-minded people and have a conversation. There's not many places in the world that you can do that.
Well, it's increasingly there is now. Everybody's a narcissist, everybody's doing shows, everybody's on not everybody's as talented as the four of us, but
it's happening more.
But how did you transition from being a dancer and a choreographer? Did you always want to be a choreographer?
So one of the main reasons I moved here was because when I was in London and Manchester, I'd always enjoyed doing choreography and I just felt like that was my skill. I'm a good dancer, but I wouldn't say I'm the greatest dancer in the room. You know, when you see some people and you're like, they're it. Like, especially in LA, you see some of the best dancers in the world and they just have this thing. I never really felt like I had that. I can dance well. I can do the job. I can do it really well. But I never felt like I was that star dancer, but I always felt like I was the star choreographer. I was like, I can see this routine before it's even happened. I can visualize it and I can translate it and I can get it out and make it look really good. So I was trying to do that in Manchester and London. I was just getting blocks. Like, that. You're either a dancer or a choreographer. You're too young to be a choreographer and you haven't done dance experience. But you haven't accomplished everything as a dancer yet, so they kind of like have make you follow these steps. So I was over it. I did a couple of jobs, came out to LA for a vacation to take some dance classes and just re-inspire myself. And on like day three of being here, I was like, oh, this is the coolest place I've ever been to. I'm just gonna move here instead. So that's what I did. So I just moved here instead. And yeah, after a month or two here, I just already was able to start choreographing for small artists again, because there's like millions of them here.
Sure.
So in London, I'd have to search for someone who, you know, who I could be like, look, I choreograph. Can I work for you? Even if it's for free, or even if we do like a little pro bono or something.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's like, I can go up to pretty much anybody and find all these new artists all the time.
Right.
And they need stuff all the time. So I can be like, hey, I'm new. So when I moved here, I was like, I'm new. don't have much experience in choreography, but look, give me $150, I'll choreograph your video for you, and I have friends that can do the video.
Right.
And then from there, it was just like kept building and kept building.
And what's the most successful video you choreographed?
Ooh.
Because I know there's a bunch.
There's a bunch, but the most successful, I would say, with that, there's actually one I just did, but it's not out yet. It was about a month ago. And it was I basically choreographed a full, it's like a rap music video,
right.
But it's full VFX. It's going to be full VFX, and I can't really say too much about it, but I think it's the most successful one I've done so far.
Oh, really?
Really, awesome. Really, because the creative side of it was very hard to do, and right. It was a lot.
So is it like motion capture?
Yeah, full motion capture, basically. And I had to choreograph the regular dancers, and then I also had to choreograph dancers that were inside a bed that was dancing.
Ooh.
And this fully customized bed was made for this project, and it's all going to be VFX and all this motion capture stuff.
What was the difference between that and your typical work?
Typical work, it's like, you know, the camera will be here, obviously we'll have different angles, I'll choreograph a piece, there's an artist in the middle, I make it look really good, I make it match the music, cool. But this one, it was like, oh, this has nothing to do with having an artist in the middle. This is all about the creative side of it. How can we make this choreography tell this story and tell it well?
Right.
And it was just such a challenge for me, and I loved it. I really loved it.
That's great. That's great. Speaking of motion capture and films, now,
yes.
You have been in a bunch of horror movies, like starting about a few years ago. How did you transition from wrestling to that?
It's kind of funny how that happened, because it was like, I don't know if you saw it, when you were talking, I kind of went like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, you know, going higher and higher, mm-hmm. you know, challenging yourself.
Were you trying to get her to choreograph a routine for you? Or?
Actually, yes. we're going to work on that.
Okay. All right. Well, actually, we might, so go ahead.
But yeah. For years, I always knew that L.A. was where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Like, I would come down here and visit. I would be on these different conventions, like Days of the Dead. And
right. As a wrestler?
No, with my first book.
Which is about splatter movies.
Yes, slasher movies.
Slasher movies.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, that's, excuse me, I mistook the splatter for the slasher.
Close.
Well, what's the difference?
Splatter movies, that was a specific genre, and it was Herschel Gordon Lewis back in the 60s.
Right.
So it's like Blood Feast, 2000 Maniacs.
Right.
But all
the stuff I masturbate to. But yeah, go ahead.
Awkward.
It's a Dark Mark show. It's always going to be awkward. Go ahead. So you wrote the book on slashers before you started doing slasher movies.
Yeah. And that's interesting, because I was working for a convention up in Seattle. It's called Crypticon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I was a panelist there. I would do the Q&As with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was also their announcer.
Right.
And I remember...
Because you have that voice.
Yeah.
Abby, how great is his voice?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a great voice.
Well, I was there, and I remember I would do these certain panels, like, for example, I was talking with Lance Henriksen.
Right.
And it was just like his movie premiere. They watched it. We did a Q&A. But the director was off doing something else, so it was just me and him. So he talked about it for like 10 minutes, and then he just kind of sat there like, okay. And I just kind of turned to him. I'm like, hey, has anybody done a career retrospective with you at this convention? And he said, no, not yet. And I was like, you want to do it right now? And he's like, yeah. When should we do this? Like, right now. Well,
okay.
Don't you need time to research it? No. Right here.
You're like, I got it. It's all in there.
Yeah. So we started, and then I...
Oh, I think, actually, jeez.
Mm-hmm.
I think we our time's almost up. I can't believe it. It's been an hour.
Oh, no.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
We're having so much fun.
We're having so much fun. I can't believe this, but go ahead and finish your story.
So...
I didn't know somebody ran it after us. Never happens.
But yeah, that's what happened is I would do these different panels, and people would say, you know what? You really know your shit.
Right.
Why don't you write a book?
Right.
So I wrote a book.
Awesome.
And, you know, of course, that moved from doing the books, and, you know, everybody would be like, you got a really great voice. Why don't you try acting?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, yeah. And that's pretty much the story of my life. It's like, I I want to try wrestling. I'm going to do it. I want to try writing. I'm going to do it.
Right.
I want to go to LA, try acting.
Yeah.
And I did it. So.
So this has never happened before. We ran out of time already, but we were having such a great conversation. Yeah. So now we're at the table here at Pirate.com Studios. So we're going to continue the conversation in not the best acoustics, but bear with me because we're going to talk about slashes right now. So based on that Lance Henriksen, mm-hmm. then you're like, well, I got a book here.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I did. Like, everybody was like, yeah, you really know your shit. So why don't you write a book? So I did. And the first book is Slash Dreams. And
great title.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a guide to slasher movies. And I didn't realize that there were that many slasher movies. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think about 300 in the first book.
And yeah, then, you had two books.
Yeah, yeah. And the second book came about because somebody did a review of my book on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And he came off like comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Right.
So he was like,
this is a great book.
You know what? It's a good book. It's a good book, but it's not a great book. Where's Sledgehammer from 1983? Silent Rage from 1987. Chuck Norris in a slasher movie. How could you forget that?
Well, and on that one, he's got a point. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I need to do this. So I wrote a second book. And the second book is more obscure movies, but it's also about 50 interviews.
Yeah.
With people from like Friday the 13th, Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street. But my favorite interviews were the really obscure ones.
How obscure?
Like Andrew Ladere from Body Count from 1987.
I have no idea. That's pretty obscure.
Yeah, yeah. Ron Cologi from Iced from 1988.
Nicole?
No idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I would imagine they'd be available.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because when I interviewed that guy from Iced, he told me that there was another movie that he did called Cards of Death, which was like an early version of Saw, but from the 1980s.
Interesting.
And there were only a couple copies that existed.
Right.
And one of them made its way to Japan.
Mm.
And an American was over there and found it in a market and brought it back to America and then found out a little bit more about it and had it distributed here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite slasher movie? What was the slasher movie that really got you excited? That got you into it?
Black Christmas.
Because Abby's into slashers, surprisingly. We found some common ground.
Yeah, that's very
cool. Love horror and slashers.
What's your favorite
of those? Oh, slasher? Halloween.
Yeah.
Original Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love Black Christmas as well.
The originals.
Yeah, but yeah. Halloween is the number
right.
one.
And not Iced.
Not Iced, but
oh, nobody likes Iced.
Look that up at some point.
Right, right. I saw something on YouTube on that, so I'm familiar with what it is.
Yeah,
yeah. It doesn't sound good.
Well, I mean, you can see how much I love.
Oh yeah, now we're gonna compare tattoos here.
See, you can see how much I love.
Well, I'm getting the camera on here, so yeah, you got this is the My Bloody Valentine minor. Is that who that is, or is that somebody else?
Yeah, it's the minor for My Bloody Valentine.
That one was good too.
And that's is that Jason? Is that what's underneath?
Cropsy from The Burning.
Oh, jeez, I'm sorry. But, who predates Jason with the mask, right?
But what's funny is I'm actually roommates with one of the actresses from the original My Bloody Valentine right now.
Cool. Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was purely coincidental.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, would you answer credits to that? What happened?
Yeah,
like, I want to live with a slasher goddess. And
yeah. Well, it was weird because I interviewed her for the second book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just stayed in touch with her and met up a few times when I was here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just put out an ad. She's like, hey, I'm running out of room. And I was like, well, shit, I don't want to go live away from LA because I was losing my place in Highland Park.
Right.
So I went to talk to her, and an hour later, I'm living there.
That's great.
Yeah. So
you can go back and tell her that I own My Bloody Valentine on DVD with the glasses that it came with, because it was the 3D version.
Oh yeah.
I think he's talking about the original My Bloody Valentine from
1980. Oh yeah, I have the remake. And I have the original, but the remake I have on 3D.
Right.
Yeah.
I like the remake too. It was good.
No, they're both good. They were both good. Yeah. So I didn't know you were such into slasher movies. So have you? Speaking of that, have you? Because I haven't seen a lot of acting gigs on your IMDb, all dancing and choreography.
I don't really act. I did a few things for BuzzFeed, and then everyone was like, "Oh, she's an actress." And I was like, "Nah, not really." But the only reason I want to act at some point is to just be in a horror movie. That's all I want. I just want that role where I'm like running down the street and I'm screaming and someone like stabs me.
Well, you're
that's it. Same that's, here. That's all I want. Just one time. I'll be good.
You're in the right company, because we know all sorts of low-budget horror movies.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm British, I have an accent, I can say like two lines pretty well.
Yeah.
Just kill me and I'll be done. So.
You could river dance too.
So and I can river dance too. So
if they ever have like the killer of the dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that. Because so I just went to...
That's all I want to do one time.
Slash dance.
Slash dance. Oh, see, the four of us have got to write this. I'm sure that probably somebody did it.
Oh, well, it's happened, but hey, remake, right?
If not that, somebody did a porn parody and called it Slash Dance. But now, we just saw... Because we're friends with Dustin Ferguson, who was our first guest here at Pirate.com Studios. I went to a premiere of two of your movies.
Yes.
But since 2017, 2018, you've been like doing like 10 movies a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You just were in the sequel to Ilsa.
Yep.
Ilsa.
Liza.
Or Liza. I said, because I was in the first Liza.
Oh, okay.
I played a pervy prison guard, typecasting. And you played, this is Liza's Palace of Pleasure.
Yes.
And Closet Monster. And you're in both.
Yeah.
And you play a perv in both of them.
Not so much in Closet Monster, but yeah, definitely in Liza.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Dustin. I have him to thank for my acting career, actually.
Yeah. How did he find you?
We were both part of some of the like horror fan forums on Facebook, and just we're talking over time, and then I was like, "Hey, we got to meet up for a drink and hang out when I get down to Cali."
Right.
And that was 2018. He moved down a couple months before that, and
he's in Nebraska. You're in Oregon or Washington.
Yeah. But we moved to the same area. Like, we were literally 10 minutes down the road from each other.
Oh, wow.
Over in Marietta by Temecula.
Okay.
Yeah. So, he got me in some of his movies, and that's why I tell people, acting, for me anyways, is a lot like wrestling. Because with wrestling, like, start in Portland, do a show there.
Right.
Maybe somebody from Seattle is there. Hey, come up, wrestle for me in Seattle. Do a show in Seattle, meet somebody from Vancouver.
It's all networking.
Yeah. So it was kind of like that with acting, too. Like, you meet somebody on the set, and then they're like, hey, can you be in my movie? Do that, somebody there, be in my movie, and it just goes from there.
Well, that's everything. That's acting, that's dancing, that's comedy, that's everything.
Yeah.
You seem to be a crack networker. How did you meet Nicole?
We met through a mutual friend, Chuck.
Yes.
We actually met during the pandemic, because it was a really cool little bar called Sunset Grill on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that place, and it's owned by this really cool guy called Ken. And, you know, after some time, you know, when nothing was opening, and Chuck, our friend Chuck was holding these really cool, like, intimate networking events with like-minded people, because they had like, an indoor-outdoor space, so we were able to be there, and I met Nicole at one of those. So, that was really cool. Yeah.
So, I mean, did you have contacts when you moved here, as far as the dance community, or have to build it
nothing.
Up?
Yeah, I built from zero. Yeah.
Right.
But just like you said, you know, start going to dance classes.
Did you meet anyone that took you under their wing?
I actually did. I had a couple of mentors, and a mentor called Brandon Dumlau, who was phenomenal. He mentored me as a dancer, helped me move into that. And then I had a guy called Cameron Lee, who I still work with to this day. And then more recently, BB Rex's choreographer, she's called Bryony Albert. She's she's actually UK as well, so she's dual UK and LA, and she goes back and forth and works with some huge recording artists. And she's she really started pushing me into like the TV space. So she got me to work on James Corden,
right?
And she got me to do the BB Rexha jobs when she wasn't here. So
now, what did you choreograph on James Corden?
We did this guy called Mark Owen, who was the lead singer of Take That, who was like the huge.
Oh, I remember Take That, yeah.
In
me
UK.
Too.
Yeah, so Mark Owen has a solo career now, and he's lovely. He's absolutely phenomenal. Such a cool guy.
And how appropriate, because they were huge in England and then kind of a blip in America.
Exactly. So it was a nice gig because, you know, I think he appreciated having British people on the team as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you have a crush on him when you were...
No, I never cared about the Take That. I was more like Backstreet Boys.
Oh, really? Well, the Americans, yeah.
I had a crush on the Americans. The American boy bands.
They're sexy, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Sexy, and by the way, if you want to be sexy, like the Backstreet Boys, or Take That, get Tactical Soap. That is one of our sponsors.
Okay.
Tactical Soap is soap that has pheromones in it. And they have three different kinds. They have Durden, Bond, and Maverick. And they have three different flavors of each. They have lotions. They have all sorts of stuff. If you go to our description, you get a code. Men, Abby will tell you, Nicole will tell you, nothing sexier than a great-smelling man, is there?
It's good to smell good. It's
definitely good to smell good.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll take that.
You can't hurt your chances.
No pun intended, but I'll take that.
Yes.
And go get Tactical Soap. So, was James Corden as big a dick as everybody says he is?
With who?
James Corden, was he as big a dick as everybody says he is?
I actually didn't even get to interact with him one time.
Oh, okay, so...
Yeah, where he keeps in his dressing room. We kept in ours with the dancers. But...
Doesn't surprise me.
I will say, the actual crew that is working on James Corden, like every single person on that team, were the most phenomenal team I've ever worked with in my life. Respectful on it. Like, they were just phenomenal. Like, we got there, and it was just like...
Yeah, I know some writers on there.
Every single part from like the stagehands to the people with the green room to the actual like stage director, they were absolutely phenomenal. Like, so I can't speak highly enough.
You're not the first person to tell me that. A lot of people have said like the crew is great and
it's just such a good.
No comment on James Corden. Yeah. So yeah,
didn't get to interact with him. So I'm not, you know,
because he's a dancer too.
Yeah,
I thought maybe you choreographed something for him, but
no. Maybe next time. Well, he's done now, so...
Yeah, there's no next time, and probably for the best from what I understand.
But I was glad, you know, I got to tick that little box before he...
that's good. England, that's great. So, yeah, no, I mean, that's you've got so many things. From what I saw on your YouTube page, you really want to, like, choreograph, like, a big tour.
Yeah, like, I want to do something
like
huge.
Like a Rihanna or...
Yeah.
You mentioned Chris Brown. I would stay away from him, but,
I would stay away from Chris Brown.
Yeah.
I think... What I really want is, there's a lot of artists that I'm working with right now that I like just signed, and I would really love for one of those to
blow up
because it's just, there's so much more satisfactory to come in at the creative level. Like all the artists I work with right now, that like kind of like mid-level artists, I don't just get to dance and choreograph. They ask my input on so much stuff. So when the music video comes out, it feels like a passion project for me as well as my work. So what I'm hoping is they continue going up and that they are going on major tours. That would bring me so much more joy than just joining a tour of like Justin or Rihanna and just, you know, because you're just so replaceable.
Right.
It's like, oh, she choreographs this, and then the next week they want the next hottest choreographer, and then this week they want this. It's fine. But my artists, I've worked with them for so many years, and I've watched them do this, and they've watched me do this. So that's my idea.
Because we're all sort of in that middling thing, just waiting for that break. And, you know, we're all talented, but it takes a lot, and it takes. And you of all of us know the machine behind it.
Yeah.
And it is a machine behind it.
Absolute machine.
Yeah. And I was gonna transition from the machine to the one thing I did want to ask you about wrestling, and then we're gonna get to your book. You've done deathmatch wrestling, which or have you?
You know what?
So I was gonna say, what was the craziest thing that happened? Like the most violent thing that you did in the ring?
Well, actually, I don't deathmatch wrestle.
Okay,
and that's kind of something that I try to stick to. Like I see a lot of it on shows,
right?
And
so you've done shows where there are people doing deathmatch, but you haven't personally done.
Yes,
it.
many.
And deathmatch for everybody is like. Broken glass, staple guns, like all sorts of shit like that. Light tubes jabbed in the face, that kind of thing.
Well,
very slasher.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been on shows with a lot of that. I've been on one with a tournament a deathmatch tournament. But I was always on with somebody else. Like one of them that I used to wrestle a lot up there was this guy named Black Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Dragon, he was like an old-time wrestler, like a legend in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But me and him would just be like, okay, we're going to do something different. We're going to have an actual wrestling match.
Right.
Everybody else is hitting each other with light tubes and shit. We're just going to have a match, a wrestling match.
And I'll bet it went over great.
Actually, yeah, it did.
Yeah, it probably was refreshing after all the carnage.
Yeah, yeah. But I have done not death matches, but hardcore matches.
Right.
There's which a is like, yeah, like
hitting each other with chairs and tables.
Tables, ladders.
Barbed wire?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Although, I do have a funny story about that. I was wrestling in Penticton, BC.
Okay.
And oh my god, this is horrible.
It's in Canada. Okay, let's hear this.
Okay, so basically what happened was I would do a spot where people hated me. They want to see something really bad happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
So they would put me, I would call this too.
Right.
Dump me headfirst into a garbage can.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what happened. They dumped me into a garbage can headfirst.
Right.
And then they pick me up. And then once the garbage can is over my head, they can do whatever they want to me. They could ram me into the post.
Right.
They could hit me.
Hit your sticks.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's what happened is I got this garbage can over my head and I'm talking to the guy. I'm like, post. No, wait. He was talking to me and he said, post. So he turns me and I know he's going to slam me into the post.
Right.
He turns me, post, slams me into that one, turns me around and he says, wall. And literally all I can see is my feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, wall, where's the wall? Fuck, where's the wall? And he's walking me, and then he just lets go of me. Like,
so you don't know when the wall's coming.
Yeah. So he throws me, and I tense up, and the garbage can flies off. It hits the wall. It bounced back and hit me in the face.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I literally, like, I like almost sit on the people in the front row. I just kind of go like this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to have a black eye.
Mm.
Oh, fuck. I'm bleeding.
Oh, shit.
Jeez.
And I come backstage, and there's a guy who used to be in WWE, Gangrel.
Right, the vampire guy.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite people to travel with.
Right.
But I walked
he's
backstage.
Canadian, right?
No, but he wrestled in Canada.
Right.
So I get backstage, and he turns around, and he just kind of goes, I'm just like, is it bad?
Wow.
Should I go to the hospital?
Wow.
Okay, like I have I don't know, they did a pretty good job with it, but I can feel it right now. They went to my eyelid.
Oh.
Like, yeah, I could have lost an eye.
Ooh.
I'm glad you
did it. Oh god, me too.
That's Evil Dead Rise style.
Yeah, but so
is this an eye thing or people that
there right, is.
Right, my My valet was Rhonda Angel. So,
oh.
Ronnie Rhonda.
Yeah.
But she's sitting there in the ER with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting my eyelid stitched up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, I was just like, hold my fucking hand.
Oh, yeah. It's tough.
It was bad.
Yeah. That's a sensitive area.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't...
I'm rubbing it and shivering as we're talking.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't do deathmatch wrestling.
Right.
I'll actually tell people that I won't do deathmatch wrestling.
And you shouldn't. Why should you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have enough broken glass that's probably still in me just from high school years.
Yeah.
So I don't need any more.
Well, I don't know what that means, but we'll get that next time. Now,
drunken shenanigans.
I'm sure. Now, Abby, what is your signature choreographed move? What is the Abby move that everybody does? Because I know Fosse's got the jazz hands, and
I've never been asked that question in my life.
Do you have a signature move?
No, not really. I don't really have a signature move. I do a lot of like. I don't have a signature move. No.
Really?
You just because everything we take in dance is like inspired from somebody else, right? Like every foundational move is just like that. So for me, it's like what you like the sequences you create with it and the patterns you create with certain things. Right. But I wouldn't say.
And you choreograph now. Have you come across people that just even though they're professional dancers, they can't do what you're teaching them?
You mean like dancers that can't do it?
Yes. Or non-dancers I can't do, because I can't dance with the shit, so I just like, yeah.
All professional dancers can do the things that I ask them to do, mostly. Oh, okay.
Have you ever had somebody like, they just couldn't get it?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of times where it maybe just doesn't fit, because obviously, like, professional dancer, you can be trained in absolutely everything, but you can really excel in this area and maybe not excel in this area, and everyone's style of dance and choreography is different, so it doesn't even necessarily mean that the dancer is bad or that the choreography is bad. It's sometimes it's just not a good fit, so. Right. It's definitely happened before. I've been
especially since you've done a lot of hip hop videos, and you're coming from a different culture and a different skill set.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll go, you know, sometimes I'll go on set or we'll work with an artist, and it's just not meshing, or like the person just doesn't look good next to this specific artist, or the two dancers just look two different, even though they might be two blondes that are exactly the same height.
Right.
They just look, they're just interpreting it different, you know. So it doesn't ever mean it's a bad thing. It's just sometimes, you know, it's just not the right fit.
Right.
So. Yeah.
And can I ask you to do something? This is weird. And this is going to be, and you could say no, but is there a basic move you can teach me? Because I can't dance worth it.
A basic move?
Yeah. That we can maybe, since we got the room here, maybe there's something you can teach me.
Sure.
And Nicole can film us. And Ronnie, if you want to get in on this.
I'm like, we can do one little. What kind of move are you trying to do?
I know it's not long.
I'm just going to give you a little snap. Okay.
Okay. It's so funny. I've been rushing. I was like,
you're like, absolutely not.
But then
okay.
I'm like dancing.
So the hands can get down, right?
Hang on. Gotta get you both in frame.
But at the same time, you're gonna pop into the right hip. So you're gonna go snap. No. So, but you also gotta like drop. So instead of thinking this, you gotta sit. Yes. So do it at the same time. So one. So like you, yeah. But then use the arm at the same time to.
Oh. Okay. All right.
So it's a one. Yeah. There you go. Two. Three, four, and do the other side. One, two, three, four. There you go.
See, I'm left handed.
That's a basic move. All right.
All right.
You can do that in the club next time.
Oh, yes. That, although if I do that and start dancing with the culture, I'll be like, oh, you're leaving. But has the wine warmed up yet? Okay.
Yeah, it is better room temperature.
Oh, good.
But it's still good.
Good. Well, we could talk all night. This is great. This is a great. I knew. Just seeing you guys separately and barely knowing you and not knowing you, that this was going to be such, it doesn't seem like it makes sense. But on my show, this is what I like to do. I like to get people that would never be in the room if it wasn't for me. And the chemistry of the four of us is great.
Absolutely.
But, and since you're into slashers, you're probably going to be into this book. And I'm into this book because there's a few reasons. I mean, this is right with my skill set. But your newest book is not about slashers.
No.
It's about your family who was in the mortuary business.
Oh,
yes.
Tell us about the book.
This is Death in the Family, Life in the Business of Death. And it came from basically road trips with my dad when I was growing up. And he would tell me all these stories, you know.
And he was a mortician.
Yes. From he started in 1973 and he's still doing it today.
Great.
Yeah. And just the craziest stories. Like I loved being on the road with him. I loved just hearing some of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, this should be a book. This really needs to be a book. So that's what I did. I
can't think of another book like it. I'm sure there's some out there, but I'm not sure. I've never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, it's very unique, and that's what I was finding is that like there's not a lot out there about this, and especially with such a personal connection.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
you love going from the cemeteries and the embalming rooms and all that.
You know, what's funny is that me and my brothers, like everybody in the family, has worked in the funeral business to some degree. One of the jobs I had was driving bodies from Wenatchee to Spokane, which is like a 3-hour drive. But I thought it was cool because I'm just like, I could listen to whatever music I want and nobody's going to say shit to me.
And so, what music was that?
Whatever. whatever I wanted.
Would you like heavy metal? Would you
yes,
like?
Yes. Okay. So, but yeah, I learned how to do cremations at one point.
Oh.
Yeah. And I.
How old were you when you learned cremations?
30.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I was going to say, I thought you were like a little kid burning bodies. I didn't know.
Well, that too, yes.
Okay.
But, no. But we did live in three different funeral homes in my life. Mm. And those stories are in the book.
Wow.
Like in...
A lot of paranormal activity?
Actually, yes. Because my dad, he never believed in that stuff before. Until we lived in certain places. So there's actually... let me try to find that here. There it is. That's where we used to live. It's this old building right next to a funeral home.
Cozy.
Yeah. And like literally, actually that is the home right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we had everybody in my family has a story about that particular building.
Mm-hmm.
And it all revolves around the lady. Like that's what we called her. It was just the lady. Like everybody saw her. I saw her. I didn't believe in it before. Like, I was just kind of like, yeah, sure, okay, whatever, lady. But yeah, me, my brothers, my dad, who didn't believe at all, my mom, my friends that would stay the night at the house, like, mm-hmm. everybody had experiences with her.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
So it wasn't like your dad had a side piece. There was an actual ghost in the mortuary.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And
what did the lady do? I know a lot of it's in the book, but is there one thing you could tell us?
Yes. I could describe her.
Oh, please.
Yeah. She wore like a Victorian dress, blue and white. I still remember that. And she had her hair up. And just, it's funny because my future wife was living with us for a while. Future mm-hmm. ex-wife, actually. Right. But yeah, she was living with us at the time,
mm-hmm.
and she was scared of the lady. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, whatever, lady. God, you and my brother, like, is everybody talking about this fucking lady? And I just remember that I heard something in the middle of the night. I was like, what the hell is that? And I'm looking. There she was.
Right.
Standing right next to the bed. And I just pulled the covers over my head, and I just said, nope.
And that's it.
Nope, not gonna happen.
And that's the first time you saw her?
Yeah. Wow. Wasn't the last time.
Wow.
But my friend, he still lives in that town. His name was Dean. Mm-hmm. And we always called him Dino. But he had the most terrifying story about the lady. And I didn't even get it out of him until like months after he stopped wanting to come over to my house.
Mm.
Yeah. And
that story's in the book.
It is, yes. Mm. But
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, it was.
And I can't believe you passed up a supernatural threesome. Well, where does the time go? This has been an hour and a half, and I could talk to you guys all night, but... and I know you've been, we didn't even get to the screenwriting. You've written a script, and it's there's a script that you just wrote about, about Native Americans. That's apparently really, really good.
Yes. Everybody is loving that one.
Right. So it's, and you wrote that real fast. I mean, you are a very fast writer.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I write while I'm at work because I work at a high school. So when it's like slow, I'll sit there and I'll write. Like, I wrote this book and I wrote two screenplays in the fall.
Wow.
Like, all of that just within a few months.
Yeah. And you got paid for it, but not for your writing, but for whatever you're doing in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you were just, okay, kids, take the test. I'm going to write my screenplay.
Thank you.
Very L.A. So do you have any wrestling gigs coming up? Any conventions coming up?
Yes. I am wrestling next Friday in Long Beach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to that. I've never wrestled there before.
I might have to come down and check it out.
Yeah. I'll have to give you all the information for it. And so I've got that. And I just got a script the other day that I've been reading through. I don't even remember what character I'm playing, but I texted the guy earlier. I'm like, hey, can you tell me what pages this character is on.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get a response, so I'm guessing.
It could be anything.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just like, I guess I'm just going to start reading through the whole thing. So
I would guess you're probably the deep voice creeper. I'm just guessing. Just a
could
hunch.
Be.
Yeah,
could be,
I think so. But if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Facebook.
Facebook. Right.
Mainly Facebook, because I have an Instagram,
mm-hmm.
but that was one of those things where, you know, I first got to LA, I started getting like gigs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to keep in touch with the people that I'm working with, right?
Right.
So I'd be like, hey, let's trade Facebook. Facebook.
Yeah. What are you, 60 years old? Nobody does Facebook anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
They might as well say MySpace.
Yeah, so they're like Instagram. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'll get an Instagram then. So my Instagram is just like professional stuff. You know, like I'll put like, oh, I was in this movie. Oh, I did this. I did that. Facebook, that's more of like me as a person. It's just like bullshit that I post.
Yeah.
Like random thoughts. Like,
so if you want random bullshit from Ronnie Angel, follow him on Facebook, Ronnie Angel.
That's right. That's right. And Instagram.
And Instagram. Abby, you have been a delight. What do you have going on? I know you got that video coming up that you can't say with the motion capture. That's great.
Yes. I'm helping produce a show right now that is going to be every Thursday in June in Hollywood at Be True. Yes.
What type of show is this?
It's a like very queer LGBTQIA+ celebration of all the crazy things. It's very sexual. It's very in your face. It's got amazing artists, amazing dancers, amazing
choreography. That sounds great.
Amazing lighting. That's going to be every Thursday in June in Hollywood.
Right.
So yeah, you can find me there. And then just I have a.
And what's the show called?
It's called Swallow.
Oh, I gotta check this one out.
It's so high quality. It's absolutely amazing. Kevin Mayer, who is Madonna's old creative director, is the person who is his show.
It's
like his brainchild, and it's phenomenal. So,
how was it working with that guy?
Intense.
Yeah.
It's intense, but
I've seen the Madonna shows. They're not. Yeah, they're
he's
pretty
just
intense.
Phenomenal. So I'm just grateful to be working on it. So and then have a couple of music videos coming up, and we'll see what's next.
Your dreams are coming true.
Dreams are coming true. Yeah.
Wow, you're working with Madonna's choreographer.
Yeah.
And what did you learn from him that you didn't know before?
I think just push the limits. He pushes the boundaries on everything that he does. Like, I'll come to him and be like, can we do this? And he'll be like, well, how about we push it times 100 and do this, 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 and this? Mm. And he'd be like, that's not possible. He'd be like, yes, it is. And then he'll find a way. And I appreciate that.
Like, well, if he still has those big Madonna tits that she used to do on her show, I'd like to, I can make a bid for those.
Yeah.
But how do people get a hold of you? Because you've got a wonderful website, YouTube channel, all sorts of things.
Instagram is the best way. Okay. Instagram, Abigail Oliver 2.
So you guys will never connect because you're on Facebook and you're on Instagram.
I know. I'll have to revive. I do have a Facebook, but.
No, but so somebody already got Abigail Oliver?
So I had Abigail Oliver, and then my Instagram got scammed.
Mm.
So now I'm Abby Ann Oliver 2.
Okay.
That was bad.
Abby Ann Oliver 2.
2, even though I'm the original.
Right.
And then YouTube, Abby Ann Oliver, and then website, abbyannolivercreative.com.
Both. Thank you for coming on, both of you. And we barely scratched the surface. We've got to have both of you back. And yes, definitely. And Nicole, your book, I don't know if you guys have read her new poetry book, Slow Burn. Everybody's loving that.
It's going well, yeah.
You can order it on
lulu.com, lulu.com.
And if people want to get a hold of you,
I am at Nicole6Books on Instagram and NicoleH6 on Facebook.
And I am Goth Comedian on all social media. Boy, I've had such a great time. I don't want to stop, but I don't want people to be opening the doors 20 times in the next hour. So everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.